and work, and loading canisters of water into his trunk to bring home to his family. The CENTCOM investigation was completed a week and a half after a drone strike and was never released to the public. 16 months later, the US media obtained 66 partially redacted pages of the report, only after suing CENTCOM under the Freedom of Information Act. The probe detailed how biases led analysts to make tragically wrong assumptions. For instance, they concluded that a package loaded into the car containing explosives because of its careful handling and size, and that the driver's erratic route meant he was trying to evade surveillance. The New York Times has also covered the same story. According to a congressionally mandated Pentagon report, the U.S. military, which invaded and illegally occupied Afghanistan for almost two decades, killed 12 Afghan civilians in 2021. The report states they were killed in a botched drone strike the American military carried out in the Afghan capital Kabul on 29th of August 2021. Just one day before the phased U.S. military drawdown ended. According to a report released recently, which constitutes only a fraction of the atrocities unleashed by U.S. occupation forces in Afghanistan, 7 of the 10 Afghan civilians killed in that incident were children. It also documents the killing of an Afghan civilian in a U.S. strike on 8th of January in the western Herat province, and another on 11th of August, in the southern Kandahar province. The botched drone strike in August of 2021 prompted a half-hearted apology from then head of the U.S. Central Command, General Frank McKenzie, who admitted it was a mistake. However, no U.S. military officials or troops were punished or held accountable for that deadly drone strike. The Taliban staged a stunning comeback in August of 2021, toppling the Western-backed government in Kabul and forcing the United States and its allies to abandon the country after years of futile military adventure. For two decades, the war in Afghanistan remained an enigma for the successive U.S. governments, from George W. Bush to Joe Biden, finally ending in a botched military exit and a disgraceful defeat. It started on 29th of February 2020, when then-US President Donald Trump's administration signed an agreement with the Taliban to pull out US troops from the country by 1st of May 2021. However, the deal failed to de-escalate tensions between the two sides. On 14th of April 2021, President Joe Biden announced that the remaining 2,500 to 3,500 U.S. troops in Afghanistan would be withdrawn by 11th of September to end what he called America's Forever War. Between May and August of 2021, the Taliban overran several key provincial capitals across Afghanistan, which, with the beleaguered Afghan forces offering little resistance. Amid the ensuing chaos and commotion, on 29th of August 2021, a U.S. drone strike killed 10 family members of an Afghan family, including 7 children, near the airport. In September of 2021, the Pentagon acknowledged it was a tragic mistake, but said none of the military personnel involved in the botched drone strike will face any kind of punishment. The website of NPR has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Pentagon said it would not punish the military team behind the errant drone strike that was intended to hit the masterminds of an attack on Kabul airport, but instead killed 10 Afghan civilians, including 7 children. U.S. Defense Department spokesperson John Kirby recently confirmed reports that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin approved a series of recommendations following an investigation into the deadly incident in August of 2021. Those did not include disciplinary action for the military service members involved in what officials had called a tragic mistake. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby told reporters during a briefing, "The Secretary of Defense is now approving or calling for additional accountability measures. I do not anticipate there being issues of personal accountability to be had with respect to the 29th of August airstrike." Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby said investigations led by General Kenneth McKenzie, who leads U.S. Central Command, and General Richard Clark, the head of the Special Operations Command, resulted in a series of recommendations for procedural changes and process improvements that need to occur and will occur, adding, "But in this particular case, there was not a strong enough case to be made for personal accountability, and no one was found criminally negligent." An investigation by the Air Force's Inspector General, Lieutenant General Sami Saeed, found the deadly mistake was the result of confirmation bias. The New York Times uncovered video footage that challenged the Pentagon's narrative that officials admitted the drone strike had been a mistake. The strike killed Zamari Ahmadi, an employee of U.S.-based Nutrition and Education International, NEI, and 9 members of his family. Last month, Nutrition and Education International founder and president Steve Kwan called the Pentagon's investigation into the incident deeply disappointing and inadequate. The Pentagon promised to pay compensation and also to help relocate abroad family members and Afghans working for Nutrition and Education International, NEI, but that remains stuck on determining just who is qualified.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَعِبَرَةً
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
کتاب الله.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم dear listeners, this is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the Viewpoint. I'm Beta, the host of today's episode, and today with me I have two dear guests, experts of today's episode. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Brother, and assalamu alaikum, brother Muhammad.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you very much for having me once again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure for me to have you here with me. So, as you know, in modern world, we are living in a virtual, actually, area, which, I don't know, sometimes we feel like we are drowning into that. As you know, today, no matter what we do, no matter how we struggle not to be connected to this virtual world, still there is social media in our lives. So, you know, I'm talking about the solitude that we actually feel when we have connection, but after losing all these connections, we feel great in ourselves to have more connections with others. But I don't know, there are many reasons that there are some obstacles that we cannot do that. And after these, we feel depressed. Of this, I don't know, so-called solitude. Maybe it's not solitude, it's loneliness or whatever you call it. Yeah. But I'm talking about that sort
of
things.
Let me reach that. I wanted to reach to that point again. We told you solitude by itself is not a bad thing because we have been asked and told to have a state of solitude in a day, let's say for 3 minutes, let's say, so to just to think and ponder on your own affairs and your own issues. But when this solitude is going to lose its identity and become something which is dangerous, this is something that should be controlled. Like, for example, you are getting isolated from your own family and you are going to, for example, work and talk with others. So yeah. Which is more preferable for you, to be with your mother, to talk with your dad, and to talk with your siblings? But the time that you have to dedicate to them, you are going to dedicate it with and pass it and spend it with others who have no value even in your life.
No, I do not agree with that part.
I mean, it can happen with those that have no value and status in your life.
Exactly. There are priorities.
But the value of the parents and the siblings should not be underestimated. We give the time, quality time for our friends, our virtual friends.
Of course.
So, yeah. Exactly. This is the point that we are expecting ourselves and, let's say, the leadership of the society to work on the management of our time that we are spending on cyberspace.
Yeah.
So we have to think on these issues. How can I spend my time so that I do not violate the rights, my own personal rights and the rights of others who are around me? So we have to think and ponder, yes, this is a facility at my hand and I have to take best use of it. So I have to manage my time, the time that I'm going to spend in it. So this point is very important. We have to increase our media literacy to see where and how to enter and to go and to visit and to check in the cyberspace, in the in the web in general. So I want to say at the same time that it has its own challenges, it has its own risk, but it might have some benefits. We have to try our best to take benefit from what is there.
Yeah, I do agree with whatever you told up to here. But, you know, sometimes you want your priority to be the virtual world. I mean, you're telling me that I have to manage my time. What is the reason? Why should I do that? When I enjoy it, when I go through these social, medias, more than being with my family, so I choose it.
Look, we have to look at the purpose of life. If the life is just to actually have and create and have enjoyments, that's okay. We can continue with that. If we have defined a goal in our life, and for example, if we have, we are actually respecting the religious values, or specifically in the Islam world, Islamic values, so we have been created.
No, you're telling me cliches. Look, you know, for example, I have 24 hours a day,
yeah.
And from
but you say, yeah, as far as I'm enjoying myself, that's okay for me. So it's not.
So, no, I'm telling you that, for example, I have 5 hours for communicating with other people a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, from these 5 hours, I am who decides, you know, which part of this amount I have to share with other people and to one to whom I'm sharing this time. I'm telling you that it has nothing to do with the goal of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have, I don't know, 19 hours left here for working on the goal of my life or working, I don't know, whatever I have to do in this life, money, financial success, and so on. And the rest of time I have, I want to share it.
Definitely,
like
you can you can enjoy your life. I mean, in case you think that this enjoyment is a good, and I mean, enjoyment in the right sense, it's okay. You can spend it with.
So it's okay.
I told you because if you have already thought about the challenges and risk of that, and if you think that the places that you are visiting or the people that you are contacting are safe enough, so don't worry. No worries. No, you have no worry then.
Thank
so
you.
So let me pose another question,
yeah.
Because I think it's going to be in line with the thing that Brother Ali was saying. This 5 hours that you have and you've decided on sharing time, but it's your decision on who you want to share. What is the criteria that you use to decide on who you want to share with? Your friends and family and so on? Are you going to give it to the virtual space or are you going to give it to your family? What makes you decide between these two? So that comes back to the same purpose of life.
Yeah.
Do you get the point, right? Even that 5 hours that you have allocated for your social space, right? Whether it be virtual, whether it be physical, it still gets back to your purpose of life and what your life is. Your life, is it more valuable if you spend time with your virtual friends, or is it more valuable if you spend time with your family?
So I think,
right?
It's
physically
not
speaking, again.
You know, yeah, I got you. I think it's not a matter of value. It's the matter of similarities. You know, when you have a lot of things in common with other people,
mm-hmm.
you want to go through them. You want to talk to them. You want to communicate with them, you know? And this is exactly what will happen when I want to choose between my family and some virtual persons. When I feel like I show a personality in virtual world that has many supporters, you know, that there are people who are telling me, okay, you are great. You are amazing. I don't know. So, and so on. I tend to show my personality in this area rather being the family, you know.
It's fine. You can have an impression with your friends in your social media and stuff. The point of discussion is how should you balance this, right? That's the main question.
Yeah, exactly.
So you must the issue, I think, the thread that began is managing your time, right? So in this 5 hours that you have that you've allocated for the social time, how should you manage it and how should you balance it? One thing is, yes, of course, you have to spend time with your friends, try to find your, you know, similarity circles and get these people around you. But at the same time, should you devalue the time that you have with your family? No. Balance it. Have time with your parents.
And even this 5 hours that you have available, so if you're spending on the virtual space, then I think the time, the enjoyment that you might have from the physical space, I mean, the real space has been lost already. So we have to think, oh, no problem, you can continue with that, but you have to at least have it in part of your mind that, okay, I'm losing another, actually, potentiality, something which is actually benefiting me even from the physical part of my body.
Sure.
See, all of this boils down to the fact that you should balance it. Don't overdo any of the aspect. Don't be too physical and forget about the virtual world, because virtual world is right now a reality, to be honest. You get access to information and you get connected to people that you weren't able to previously. That was impossible previous. But at the same time, should you just indulge into this and forget about the rest of the life? No. There's, like, for example, this new platform that came from Facebook, Metaverse. Now, that's something that I personally would be against, because you're even augmenting the entire reality into a virtual life.
Yeah.
That's like, conceptually, it's something that I wouldn't agree upon. Now,
so,
social media, yes, but like this augmented reality, making this entire reality into a virtual, something virtual, that's conceptually something to disagree upon.
So you told something which is really beautiful. You know, you told virtual world is reality.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when, for example, I spend the whole 5 hours of, I don't know, the time I have to communicate with other people in the social media, I feel like, I don't know, a kind of depression, I can call it. I don't know what is it. I want encourage you to share your ideas with me about the point that, is it because this is virtual world? I mean, it is this, I don't know, feeling of depression. The reason of feeling this depression is because of this virtual world, because it is not a physical world.
Not conceptually. If you look at the virtual world itself, it's not necessarily the virtual world that's causing you that. It's the content of the virtual world, because there are many people who are very happy dealing with virtual friends because they have clear-cut boundaries. They know their similarities, and they know which friends they should choose. There are friends in social media, just like in the physical world, that are not necessarily good ones. They're also ones. It all comes back to the fact that how social media influences our personality.
So are you sure about that? People don't fake their happiness in social media.
Because this is the nature of human being.
You know, yeah. We need being physical. I think
it's like, you see, the thing, the same way people can fake their personality and their emotions in the physical world, they can do it even better in the virtual world.
Exactly.
Because with the physical world, you can see the body language. One way or the other, you'll be able to understand that person is faking or not. But in the virtual world, the only thing you're faced with is either a picture or a text or some form of a multimedia, which makes it a bit difficult to understand whether the person is faking or not. But I'm not talking about faking and how this faking would affect. I'm talking about the actual influences that this virtual world, the social media, has on your personality, making you feel insecure. For example, those especially those who take selfies, they're the selfiests, I would call them. Like, yeah. you would be surprised at the trend. If you look at their first selfie and the selfie that they're taking now, let's say for example a span of 5 years, you'd be surprised the changes they went through.
Exactly.
Their hairstyle, their makeup, the way they pose, everything, just because of the comments and likes. They felt that if they pose like this, it's going to be better, and not like that, they get more likes. Comments, oh, your hair looks like that. Your hair should look like this. You feel insecure about your own personality. You're not you anymore. You're enslaved to the comments likes that you get in the social media. That's why I mentioned there are specific niches of social media. And conceptually, some of these niches should be disagreed upon. For example, TikTok, I definitely disagree upon on any time of the day. Because it's a niche that it's completely destroying the culture, the culture fabric of the society. But like things like LinkedIn or other social, like personal peer-to-peer social medias, they're like tools. You can communicate easily with your colleagues and peers without feeling insecure unless you don't know that person, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because people can also make you feel insecure in WhatsApp and other, you know, peer-to-peer social media as well.
One of
the reasons that you might actually be in a state of depression and anxiety is that you are sure that the people who are around you in this environment are not the real people. At least not all of them, but at least, let's say, for example, at least 20% of them. So when you actually enter this environment with this mentality and mindset that, oh, did this person that I'm talking about, does he actually exist virtually? I mean, in reality? Does he exist in reality? So this is that you actually are in a state of doubt that if he exists or he does not exist. I mean, this if you collect all these facts and actually collect all of them together, you will face a sort of, a chaos inside yourself that whom am I talking about and whom am I spending the time with?
Yeah.
If the person that I'm talking, for example, to for years, it is a boy, but in reality, he might be a girl on the other side.
It happened to me.
You see?
Yeah.
So tell me about the stories I heard about these.
Yeah.
There was a boy, but then in reality, it was a girl.
Yeah. So we see that. So this is something that it doesn't let you to be tranquil and calm. So all in all, we want to say that everything should be spent. I mean, the time should be spent between all the affairs that or issues that we have equally in the amount that they are really needed. I mean, the time that we need to pay attention to the family and to give it to family, it should be on its own place. And the time that I need to have in cyberspace with my genuine friends that I know, for example.
Yeah.
It should be there in its own place. But even the kind of contact that we are going to have with our genuine friends should sometimes happen in reality. I mean, in physical spaces, because it has its own benefits. At least you walk and you do sort of, let's say, exercise for yourself
yes,
to go and check your friends and see your friends. So I want to say that virtual space, with all its negative points that have, it has lots of positive opportunities for us.
Of course.
So we have to look at it with this mindset that it can bring us benefits.
Yeah. Thank you for your elaboration and being here. And also, Brother Muhammad, let me have one gist from you of being happy in modern world.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do? Just, I don't know, one sentence. I think you told the answer in your conversation up to here, but...
Being happy is a very good question. And I think in one sentence, I can say, personally, meditation is actually one of the best ways.
Yeah.
Staying away from... Having a healthy personal life, physical one, and thinking about yourself, doing calculation about yourself, doing meditation, it really brings happiness to you.
Exactly. And I think the maintaining of balance that you told in our speech
Definitely.
Was the most important thing I've learned in this discussion. So thank you, your experience of today's episode, for being here with me. It was all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you, dear listeners. I bid you farewell, and I leave you in the warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody. Today is the 28th of Rajab, the day when the Prophet's grandson, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, was forced to leave his hometown, Medina, because of the pressures of the Umayyad rulers. Here is what the martyr of Karbala has said. In order to awaken the conscience of the seekers of truth and justice, who never yield to oppression. Yazid is a corrupt man who imbibes wine, puts to death the soul which Allah forbids to be harmed, and declares his debauchery in public. A man like me will never give pledge of allegiance to a man like him.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Democracy in history. Part 1.
Rome, the sacred Christian empire. The land of war and glory. The land of great churches and hidden Mithraism temples. A land built on the remains of Greece, Greek gods, Greek memories, with colonies in three continents and a great eastern enemy, Iran. The land of Persia, the land of Ahura. A land stretching from the Indus to the Nile, with rulers chosen by Ahura Mazda and soldiers adorned in steel to the teeth. A land that went down on its knees by Alexander's attack, but was not destroyed. And Greece, ancient Greece. the glorious Mediterranean civilization and its gods, theaters, and philosophers. An ancient civilization that dates back 2,000 years, with unique methods of ruling over people. People who built those governments and their methods of governance over themselves. Athens, 392 BC. Socrates is accused of impiety and corrupting the minds of the youth of Athens. The jury at his trial found Socrates guilty and sentenced him to drinking the poison hemlock.
Socrates says people do not like to have their knowledge questioned, but I know that I know nothing.
This sentence led Socrates to death in Athens. As Plato puts it, Socrates was the first victim of democracy.
This is a betrayal of our gods. We're giving the reins of affairs to a bunch of people who are thirsty for fame, position, and money. They are destroying the main role of traditions.
Socrates believed that just as a shoemaker or mason needed skills to do his job, a governor needed to be skilled too, to have the political knowledge to rule. Socrates made fun of Greece's democracy and believed that competence and eligibility were needed for a government. The biggest claimants to that eligibility were Athenian noblemen and wealthy people who thought their origin and pedigree already provided them with that competence. But Socrates believed that this competence and knowledge could be achieved by training and education.
None of them wanted to have anything to do with morality or justice. They wanted to have nothing to do with intelligence or knowledge. They just wanted power and a system based on the fight for political survival and even lies and deception. Let me put it this way. You can fully realize the meaning of democracy if you compare it to other political systems. Demagogism is the opposite form of democracy. Socrates believed that their version of democracy was in fact another form of demagogism.
Socrates said, "If you kill a man like me, you will hurt yourself more than you hurt me." But he didn't mean the court, he meant the people of Athens. We remember the Athenians for their democracy today. But this is not their reality. Athens had three social groups: the rich and nobles, craftsmen and traders, and farmers. The rulers of Athens were called Archon. Archon was a chosen ruler who held permanent tenure at first. In 752 BC, it turned into a 10-year position, and then in 683 BC, it became a 1-year position. But even that did not change anything. The social inequality and class differences of the Athenians brought about the first sparks of change. The considerable growth in the number of non-Athenians and slaves was a serious threat to the Athenians. In fact, their lives depended on it. The nobility and landowners did almost nothing, but it was by the labor of the slaves that Athens was standing.
در آتن 400,000 نفر زندگی میکرد. 200,000 نفرش برده.
400,000 people lived in Athens. 200,000 of them were slaves. These slaves were either war prisoners or sold into slavery somehow, or transported to Athens from North Africa or other places, such as Phrygia or north of Greece, and were set to difficult works.
به اصطلاح به کارهای مشکلی گماشته می شدن اینها به هیچ وجه نه فقط به هیچ وجه از حقوق مساوی با دیگران
They did not enjoy the same rights as other people of Athens and even their life was in the hands of the eunuch or the person who owned them 70,000 out of these 200,000 people were metics Metic is a Greek term which means stranger or foreigner They were not slaves. Those foreigners were not slaves, but they were not considered ordinary citizens either.
There was a parliament that consisted of citizens, citizens who had already been purged, selected, and chosen. They did not include all the city residents.
The difference between smallholders and big landowners fanned the first flames of protests into life. The coalition of the Athenian farmers and craftsmen led the famous poet Solon to become the archon and managed to pass laws with his great authority. Solon's reforms divided the Athenians into four groups. Under his laws, the sale of debtors who could not pay their debts was forbidden, and slaves who had already been sold were returned to their country. The most important part of Solon's law was the creation of a council of 400 for selecting archons, in which everyone except women and slaves could vote and choose an archon from among nobles and traders. That was the first election in the world, the father of today's democracy.
یه جوان 18 ساله میتونه در اون تجمعی که در
An 18-year-old youth could join the crowd that had gathered in Athens in the place called Agora, the city's public square. He could express his opinion and criticize the government and judges. He could get people excited to incite that crowd. He could argue his opinions with other youth and older people. Anyone in general. He could meet influential government officials. It was something very exceptional.
There were 12 tribes in Athens. Each one of them lived in a certain neighborhood in the city. Each one of these neighborhoods was called Damer, which means a place where a tribe or ethnic group lived. They were all related to each other. They were the free people of the city. Democracy meant their representatives had to rule.
Not anyone was allowed to take part. Who could take part? Noblemen, those who had Athenian origin. So women and slaves were excluded from decision-making and taking part in determining their own political, social, economic, and cultural fate.
They comprised one-eighth of the whole population of the city. The Athenian democracy belonged to one-eighth of the people.
So democracy at that time bore no relationship to our modern concept of democracy. It can be said that the only similarity found was that the people who were members of this tribe kept fighting each other and making decisions.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamu alaikum. And welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. The topic of this episode is the art of saying no. That was an interesting topic, and I invite you to listen to this till the end.
I never thought about all the things you have given to me. I never thanked you once. I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you. Until I took the first step, and that's when you opened the doors for me. Now, Allah, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
Today, Sunday, is the 28th of Rajab, 1444, of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 30th of Bahman, 1401, of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 19th of February, 2023, of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we listen to some verses of the Holy Quran. For today, we listen to verses of chapter Al-Kafirun. Let's listen to it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الْكَافِرُونَ.
Say, O disbelievers,
لَا أَعْبُدُ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ.
I do not worship what you worship.
وَلَا أَنْتُمْ عَابِدُونَ مَا أَعْبُدُ.
Nor are you worshippers of what I worship.
وَلَا أَنَا عَابِدٌ مَا عَبَدْتُمْ.
Nor will I be a worshipper of what you worship.
وَلَا أَنْتُمْ عَابِدُونَ مَا أَعْبُدُ.
Nor will you be worshippers of what I worship.
لَكُمْ دِينُكُمْ وَلِيَ دِينِ.
For you is your religion, and for me is my religion.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The verses of this surah address the Holy Prophet, and the command is, say, O you disbelievers, I worship not what you worship, nor do you worship whom I worship. Thus he clearly defines his way, which is totally different from their way. He frankly states that he never worshiped idols, and that they, with their stubbornness and the blind following of their ancestors and their persisting in it, never agree with worshiping Allah, which is free from polytheism, nor do they leave their unlawful great amounts of income gained from other idol worshippers.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light guides me through my darkest night, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you.
Listeners of this program, today's special, as I told you, today we're going to speak about the art of saying no. Have you ever been in a situation where you agreed to do something for no other reason but simply because you could not say no? This has happened to a lot of us. Imagine situations like someone telling you that they want to come over and you end up saying yes, although that time was very inconvenient to you. So you agree to do something because you did not have emotional courage to refuse doing something or opposing something. But once you were in that situation, because you did not agree to it with conviction and happiness, you ended up backbiting that person and thus burning away your good deeds.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. This is Ali, and we are going to talk about the art of saying no. This is actually one of our basic problems that we have, and we face it, and we face with this problem in different aspects of our lives. Have you ever been in a situation where you agreed to do something for no other reason but simply because you could not say no? So you agreed to do something because you did not have emotional courage to refuse doing something or opposing something. But once you were in that position because you did not agree to it with conviction and happiness, you ended up backbiting that person and thus burning away your good deeds. This has happened to a lot of us. Imagine situations like someone telling you that they want to come over and you end up saying yes, although that time was very inconvenient to you. Recall the day when someone called you on your cell and you could not say upright that you were busy and ended up lying and cooking up a story. Remember when someone asked you for a money loan and you did not want to give it but ended up giving it and doing so much ghibah or backbiting of that person that all the reward Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had promised you when you give the loan to someone was wasted away. The situation becomes even graver when you are in a leadership position as a leader. You're not just responsible for yourself, but also the household, the jama'ah, the community, or the organization you are a leader of. Situations like telling a colleague at work who is also a friend that he cannot be given a certain project or raise, telling your children as a parent that a certain thing is not allowed, or as a worker in Deen, telling a subordinate that even though you appreciate their suggestion for a different strategy of da'wah, it cannot be implemented. Sometimes people in leadership positions overcommit and bite off more than they can chew without considering their time limits. They say yes to everyone and end up not respecting their commitments. This again adds to one's sins.
IRIB English Radio. Recitation as well as translation of Quran.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ.
And we certainly gave Moses the scripture that perhaps they would be guided.
Short commentary of the Quran.
لا إله
Islamic issues.
Institution of the family in Islam is the most beloved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The life of the infallible. All in all, in today's special, IRIB English Radio.
Saying no, why? One of the answers for this why is about your time. Yes, because you should value your time. Know your commitments and how valuable and precious time is. When someone asks you to dedicate some of your time to a new commitment, you'll know that you simply can or cannot do it. After evaluating your current workload and commitments and decide that you cannot, gently tell them that you have a full plate and aren't able to help right now. You need to be polite but firm about guarding your time.
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I eat is thanks to you. Every breath I take, every bird I hear, every smile I see is thanks to you.
Now let's look at how to say no without feeling guilty. Say no and don't try to justify why. Justifying is when you say no to someone, but then proceed to explain and justify why. Sorry, I can't because I'm busy that weekend. When you make an excuse, all that does is make the other party think. If they only tweak their request with a different day, you'll be fine. Which is not the case. When you justify, you're opening yourself up to a response like, okay, then how about the following weekend? Then you're going to have a lie and make up some other excuse and on and on. You'll think you're polite, but it's actually kind of untruthful and misleading. Learn to say, sorry, I apologize, I can't make it. But I pray it works out. And done. Notice there is no justification and no invitation for other person to challenge your excuse.
So when you were young, you always wanted to do the craziest things. You just wanted to have fun. But when you're young, there's a word that literally ruins your day. It's a word that you never wanted to hear. And it's a word that meant doom, destruction in the mind of a toddler. And it's only two letters. And it's only two letters, yet so powerful. And that word is the word no. Can I have some more candy? No. Can I go out and hang out with my friends on a school night? No. Can I go to school dressed as Batman? No. And you remember growing up and you associate the word no with rejection and denial and you got so mad at your parents. Here's the thing though. You're young and you're unaware. And while you're young and unaware, your parents actually act as your conscience. Why can't you have candy? Because it's going to make your stomach hurt. Why can't you go hang out with your friends on a school night? Because you have to study. And now why can't you wear your Batman costume to school? Because being a superhero is a full-time job. And the thing is though, as you grow up, you start to understand what the word no means. You learn that the word no means to reject.
The The topic of this episode of today's special was the art of saying no, inshallah. We continue to speak and learn more and more about this interesting topic. Till then, Allah bless all of you. Have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi,
Muhammad Nabi, علي إمامي.
لا فتى إلا علي، علي إمامي، علي إمامي، علي إمامي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.